It's The Unbelievable Truth with your host, David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, a panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Please welcome Tony Hawk, Zoe Lyons, Holly Walsh and Henning Vain. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Holly Walsh. As a teenager, Holly received a Duke of Edinburgh Gold Award. It was presented to anyone who could make an offensive remark about people from 20 or more different nationalities. Holly, your subject is Jane Austen, the English novelist known for her witty and insightful portrayals of English middle and upper class life. Off you go, Holly. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
A keen amateur boxer, home brewer, hot sauce addict and inventor of the air fryer, Jane Austen is best known for publishing over 40 books in her lifetime and six more after her death under the pseudonym Richard Osman. Despite being the first celebrity to have a personal publicist, Jane hated being recognised.
Tony.
I think Jane Austen had a personal publicist.
No.
Oh.
Well, actually, I don't know if she did. Doesn't say. What Holly
but what
said...
I said was, I think it, which is true. Well,
we're not trying to spot true things that you're saying at the moment.
I'm going to be rubbish
at this. Where we look for true things Holly's saying.
Okay.
What Holly said is that she was the first celebrity to have a personal publicist, which is not true because publicists were around in ancient Egypt, which is earlier.
But there were so there were no celebrities in ancient Egypt.
Well, I can think of one.
So can I.
Yeah. And the fact that you've heard of them is down to that publicist's hard work. Holly. Holly, read it out loud.
Despite being the first celebrity to have a personal publicist, Jane hated being recognised and always wore sunglasses, a cap and a fake moustache when she left her stately home.
Tony.
I think she hated being recognised.
It says here, no evidence, but she was reserved. Who's going to go, hey, that's Jane Austen, I recognise her from her prose style.
Like all good writers, Jane Austen was obsessed with the name Susan. She named five characters in her book Susan, including the pole dancer in Pride and Prejudice, which was originally published under the title Susan, two different charwomen, both of whom die in a suicide pact in the fifth chapter of Emma, which was originally titled Susan, the elderly male reverend in Northanger Abbey, which was initially written under the heartbreaking title Susan, and of course, Susan Sensibility from Sense and Sensibility.
Tony.
Did she have five characters called Susan in her books?
No. No, there are three characters in her books called Susan. One is Lady Susan Vernon.
Lazy Susan.
No. Lady Susan Vernon is one. And then there's a Susan Price in Mansfield Park and a Susan Parker in Sanditon.
But Jane Austen is probably best known for coining almost every single phrase we use in the English language, including the phrase, to coin a phrase. She was the first writer to use the expression, kick the bucket, as in, shut up, Mr. Darcy, or I'll kick you right in your bucket. She was also the first to use the expression, shut up.
Zoe.
I'm going for bucket.
Kick the bucket.
Kick the bucket.
Coined by Jane Austen.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Amongst the terms that old Janie Pops introduced to her novels were baseball, foreplay, walk of shame, and the feminist war cry, zigga zigar.
Thank you, Holly.
Hi.
Now, at the end of that round, Holly, you have managed to smuggle five truths. This hasn't happened for a long time. Years and years, and they were some very tired episodes where I think people had just stopped trying. So to do that at the beginning when everyone's energised and absolutely, you know, up brimming with the shit they want to talk is amazing. So well done. And those five truths are, Jane Austen brewed her own beer. In 18th century Britain, brewing beer was a common household practice, and it was the woman's role to be the brewer, or brewster, as female brewers were known. We know from a letter to her sister that Jane Austen brewed spruce beer, made using the buds of the spruce tree, which had citrus and pine flavours. The second truth is that Jane Austen always wore a cap. Typically associated with spinsters, caps were a fashionable and practical accessory during the Regency period, worn as a sign of respectability and modesty. Jane Austen's niece noted that she, quote, always wore a cap. I never saw her without one, either morning or evening.
And yeah, she like only wore a cap so that she wouldn't be recognised.
From her trademark cap. The third truth is that Susan was Jane Austen's original title for Northanger Abbey. The fourth truth is the earliest recorded use of the word baseball in an English novel is in Jane Austen's Northanger Abbey, previously called Susan. Women of Austen's era did play baseball, though the game is thought to have been more social than competitive. And the fifth truth is that Jane Austen was the first person to use the expression in a book, shut up. Though not in the sense of keep quiet, but of being locked in a room with someone. Austen is also credited with the first recorded use of several other common expressions, including the terms dinner party, doorbell, sponge cake, dirt cheap, and brace yourself. So, yeah. And that means, Holly, that you've scored 5 points! Jane Austen's novels are so chaste they contain only 14 kisses between them, with just 3 involving lip contact between a man and a woman, plus only 1, albeit eye-watering, description of rimming. We turn now to Henning Vane. Henning says when he started performing in the UK, World War II stereotypes were still prevalent and British audiences were not ready for a German comedian. He still remembers a gig in Coventry where he completely bombed. Mixed response. Henning, your subject is berries, fleshy fruit developed from a single ovary of a flower. Off you go, Henning.
Almost everything in the modern world is a berry. Things that are berries include raspberries, blackberries, strawberries, cranberries, Mary Berry, her daughter, Hailey Berry, the disease, Berry Berry, Berry from EastEnders and Bury St. Edmunds. Confusingly, the northern town of Bury is classified not as a berry, but as a type of swamp. Berries appear in the book of Isaiah, which teaches us that the topmost olive berries should be left for the poor. Isaiah was charged under the anti-discrimination law for excluding the disabled, the height-restricted, and anyone without a ladder.
Zoe.
That's got to be true. The high berries for the poor without ladders.
You're absolutely right. Yes.
Highbury is ironically not for the poor now, is it?
Mm. Oh, no.
Very good. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
During the Cold War, Americans refused to eat Chinese gooseberries because of their communist implications, which is ironic as they're in fact from Australia, which ironically is now owned by China. Sales took off when these Chinese gooseberries were renamed as kiwis.
Are Chinese gooseberries from Australia?
No.
The tomato berry has long had negative connotations. More than 100 years ago, Germans started calling Italians treulose Tomaten, or disloyal tomatoes, because they chose the wrong side in the First World War. The Italians were so upset by it that they chose the right side, albeit briefly, in the second one.
Zoe.
Did the Germans call them... I'm sorry, Henning, you'll have to say it again.
Treulose Tomaten?
That's the one.
They did indeed.
Did they?
Yes. The phrase Treulose Tomaten is still a common German idiom used to describe a fair-weather friend. The tomato is a plant whose fruit is an edible berry that's eaten as a vegetable.
Well, the idea that bananas are slippery also comes from the German, Allglatte Banane. And cool as a cucumber from Kalt wie eine Gurke, when cucumbers were used as thermometers by vets. But berries don't just fuel people, they also fuel things that run on fuel, like all of King Charles's cars. In 2017, the Volkswagen Golf GTI, his mum, or to be more precise, the taxpayer, gave him back in the 1980s, was converted to run on vintage wine.
Holly.
I think that's true.
It's not true. But it's a sneaky one because King Charles's Aston Martin DB6 has been converted to run on wine.
I think he drove it at the coronation or someone's wedding.
The coronation. I distinctly remember some sort of coach.
It was William's wedding. Yeah. William's wedding.
It was William's wedding.
William's wedding.
He drove the wine car.
Yeah.
Harry's
wedding, he got him an Uber.
You know that wine car thing?
Yeah.
It was a bit sneaky.
Yes, it was.
Can I have the point?
No.
No, but it was just... I just think that's bad.
Yeah, I think the way it works here, Holly, is that Henning just loses friends. But keeps the points.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think everyone realises that Henning has rather spoilt the evening. But nevertheless, it is within the rules of the game, and, you know, that's that. Thank you, Henning. And at the end of that round, Henning, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are that a cranberry is a berry. According to botanists, a berry is defined as a simple fleshy fruit that develops from a single flower's ovary and typically contains multiple seeds. Cranberries are therefore true botanical berries, as are gooseberries and blueberries, while raspberries, blackberries and strawberries are not berries but aggregate fruit. Fruit that consists of a number of smaller fruit. Other true botanical berries include bananas, tomatoes, pumpkins, watermelons, grapes, and all relatives of the cucumber.
I tell you what, I for one am glad that we left the EU.
The second truth is that during the Cold War, Americans refused to eat Chinese gooseberries because of their communist implications. In 1904, Mary Fraser, headmistress of a New Zealand girls' school who'd been visiting mission schools in China, brought back to New Zealand the seeds of a fruit the Chinese called the monkey peach. After the seeds were planted, people thought the fruit resembled the flavour of a gooseberry and began calling them Chinese gooseberries. New Zealand started exporting these Chinese gooseberries to the US in the 1950s, at the height of the Cold War, and the association with the word Chinese drastically hindered sales due to a widespread fear of communism. So that's true. And what is also true is that the sales of Chinese gooseberries then took off when they were renamed kiwi fruit. So, yeah, Chinese gooseberries are really monkey peaches and are now called kiwi fruit. So, there you go. And that means, Henning, that you've scored 3 points. An old tradition was that anyone who kissed under the mistletoe had to remove a berry. Once the mistletoe had been stripped of its berries, kissing was no longer allowed. And for another year, everyone was safe from Uncle Brian. Next up is Zoe Lyons. Zoe recently appeared on the Channel 4 show Celebrity SAS, where 16 celebrities were put through what the Radio Times described as a brutal and soul-destroying experience. Coincidentally, the same billing it gave to Children in Need. Zoe, your subject is the Netherlands, sometimes referred to as Holland, a country in northwest Europe known for its low elevation, progressive drugs policies, and ubiquity of bicycles. Off you go, Zoe.
I've actually been advised to never visit the Netherlands, as the chances are a small boy will attempt to prod me with his finger. Skiing, exhibitionism is the most popular activity in the Netherlands, to such a degree that prior to being known as the Netherlands, the entire country was once referred to as the Nether Regions. Those wishing to acquire a Dutch passport now must sit through a video celebrating beach nudity, and it's legal to ride your bike naked through Utrecht on the King's birthday.
Henny.
They have to watch footage of naked people, right?
Yes, that is correct. Yes. Yes, in order to qualify for Dutch citizenship, it's mandatory for applicants to watch a two-hour-long film titled To the Netherlands, which celebrates various aspects of Dutch culture, including beach nudity. The clip features a topless woman emerging from the sea and walking onto a crowded beach, accompanied by the narration, "People do not make a fuss about nudity." The beach nudity is preceded by a shot of two gay men kissing in a public park. I don't know what comes after that. Drugs, I'm assuming. On to the drugs and cycling.
Somebody does something unspeakable with a tulip. Oh, so... The Dutch approach to the monarchy is so laid back that it is written into ancient law that every Dutch citizen is entitled to rule the country for 1 week of their lives. This potential access of the commoner to royal assets has resulted in a substantial downgrading in their quality. The official royal carriage is an old milk cart. The crown jewels are made from glass and coloured foil, and the official residence is available for rental on Airbnb.
Holly.
One of those is true.
Yeah. Can I press you as to which?
The tinfoil one is probably unlikely, isn't it?
I reckon it is the tinfoil one.
Oh, the crown jewels are made from glass and coloured foil? That one? You going for that one? You're seriously going for... That's absolutely right.
Yes.
Yes, the Dutch crown jewels include a coronation crown made in 1840 from gold-plated silver and featuring fake pearls and jewels made from glass, coloured foil and fish scales. In the Netherlands, newly appointed monarchs don't have a coronation. Instead, they are formally inaugurated with the crown jewels placed on a cushion beside them. Where their crown jewels are placed, it doesn't say. But I expect it's in the video. Zoe.
It is widely acknowledged that without the prevalence of vast amounts of cannabis, the Netherlands would constantly be at war, possibly still due to the fear of invasion. To this day, sirens are tested every month across the Netherlands, and in a playful twist, a regular outdoor afternoon rave in the Rotterdam area uses the sirens to signal the start of party time.
Tony.
The sirens are tested every month.
Correct! Yeah.
David, who are they scared of?
The people of the Netherlands love a fight so much that the Spanish Inquisition once had to condemn the whole country to death for heresy. Allegedly...
Holly.
I think that Spain condemned the whole of the Netherlands to death.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Yeah. On the 16th of February 1568, during the Spanish Inquisition, King Philip II of Spain issued a death sentence to the entire population of the Netherlands, which was at the time over 3 million people. The brutality of King Philip's repression of the Netherlands ultimately led to the Dutch revolt against Spanish rule and the establishment of a prosperous, independent, Protestant Dutch Republic in the north, while the southern provinces, roughly modern Belgium, remained Catholic and under Spanish rule.
The pastry war of 1799 with Belgium lasted just 2 days and was started after a Belgian foot soldier lobbed a bun over the fortified border, hitting Wim de Winters, the head of the Dutch military, in the face. Belgian buns are known as coward biscuits in the Netherlands, and brown sugar traditionally used in the recipe is known as donker bastard sugar. Edam cheese was first made by a Yorkshireman who was living in Holland at the time.
Thank you, Zoe. And at the end of that round, Zoe, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that brown sugar is known in the Netherlands as donkere bastardzucker. The term bastardzucker is thought to translate to inferior sugar, a reference to the molasses and other ingredients added to refined sugar to lower the cost of production. And that means, Zoe, you've scored 1 point. It's now the turn of Tony Hawks.
So nice you've got Brian Blessed with you. That's great.
Tony has recently released a self-composed jazz album available as a digital download. The album's also available as a special edition with bonus features such as fewer tracks and... and no volume. Tony is currently touring with his comedy show An Evening with Tony Hawks. The show is very popular, especially with Tony's partner, who gets to enjoy an evening without Tony Hawks. Your subject, Tony, is school, an institution at which instruction is given, usually to children or young people. Off you go, Tony.
In a recent survey, the four most commonly shouted things by teachers at their class were "Get out," "Stop talking," "My God, you're an ugly bunch," and "Please put the knives away, children." The loudest single word ever shouted was "quiet" by a primary school teacher from Northern Ireland.
Zoe.
Oh, that sounds like something they would absolutely do on a regional television show, doesn't it? That they love a bit of shouting, don't they? Quiet! I can imagine that.
Well, you're absolutely right. According to Guinness World Records, the record for the loudest individual shout is held by Annalisa Ray, a primary school teacher from Northern Ireland, bellowing the word "quiet" at 121.7 decibels on the 16th of April 1994. According to Corey Taylor, lead singer of the heavy metal band Slipknot, quote, "Our shows top out at 109 decibels, and those are quite loud, so 121 is stupid."
It is compulsory for famous people to be rubbish at school. Jack Nicholson was so keen to practice being a bad guy that one year he got a detention at school every single day. And Sue Pollard was expelled for kissing a boy in double geography.
Zoe.
Sue Pollard, definitely. She's got form.
No.
Oh.
Holly.
Jack Nicholson.
Yes. Yes, Jack Nicholson, who was voted class clown by his high school class of 1954, revealed in an interview in The Independent, "I was always against authority, hated being told anything by my teachers, by parents, by anyone. At school, I created a record by being in detention every day for a whole year."
I can't believe between Jack Nicholson and Sue Pollard for doing something naughty, you went for Sue Pollard.
I didn't want to go for the obvious one, and I should have done.
There was a little bit more to that sentence.
Oh.
And Sue Pollard was expelled for kissing a boy in double geography and making him cry.
Is that a reference to something she did?
She didn't do that.
No. All right.
That's the nature of this programme.
Tony just plays the game very, very well.
Yeah.
It won't be reflected in the final score. Geography teachers are all evil. Former geography teachers include Pol Pot, Stalin, Adolf Hitler, General Franco, and Simon Cowell.
Zoe.
I've got to go for one of them. I've got to go Franco.
No.
Oh, God.
No, Franco was never a teacher of any sort.
Sam Cooke wrote his best-known song after receiving a particularly bad school report, which read, "Sam appears to know very little about history, biology, a science book, or the French he took, and even less about geography, trigonometry, algebra, or what a slide rule is for. If he doesn't start to apply himself, he'll soon discover this isn't the wonderful world he clearly thinks it is." And the Pink Floyd song, "We Don't Need No Education," was written whilst Roger Waters was attending a conference on double negatives at the University of York. Liam Neeson used to be a school teacher but got fired when a boy pulled a knife on him in class. And Neeson said, "I want you to put down that knife, but if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you and I will kill you." And then punched him in the face.
Holly.
Did he used to be a teacher?
Who?
Liam Neeson.
Yes. And?
Can I have the
point? You can get the point anyway. You've just chosen the boring part of the fact. The true thing is that Liam Neeson used to be a school teacher but got fired when a boy pulled a knife on him in class and Neeson punched him in the face. He said of the incident, "He was a big guy too. He was about 15 years of age, but it was like, wow. So I had to punch him. And then I was reprimanded for hitting the kid.
All schools try to get children to emulate important role models. In Japan, there's a school which teaches pupils to behave like Anne of Green Gables. In Russia, there's a school which teaches pupils to reason like Karl Marx. And in Argentina, there's a school which teaches pupils to handle the ball into the goal if they can't reach it with their heads.
Sorry. I'm going to go for the Anne of Green Gables thing, because that does sound like something that would happen in Japan.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
The 1908 Canadian novel Anne of Green Gables is a huge phenomenon in Japan. The story first gaining traction after a Japanese translation was released after the Second World War, when uplifting literature was sought for schools and many Japanese children were orphans. Orphan Anne's story of overcoming hardship and longing for a sense of belonging resonated with Japanese readers. The school's buildings are designed in a Canadian style, and students have even been sent to Prince Edward Island, where the novel is set, on cultural exchange programs.
Over 50% of comedians say they cultivated their sense of humour as a defence mechanism following a traumatic experience at school. And that was certainly the case for me. I can still vividly recall the first time I wet myself in class. And, most humiliating of all, that walk of shame back to the staff room.
Thank you, Tony. At the end of that round, Tony, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which was that Pol Pot was a geography teacher. Mussolini also taught geography. And that means, Tony, that you've scored 1 point. During the Great Plague of 1665, boys at Eton were punished for not smoking, as smoking was thought to protect them from the disease. One of the many things Etonians have been wrongly taught over the years, along with, you're fit to be Prime Minister. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 3 points, we have Tony Hawkes. In third place, with 1 point, it's Zoe Lyons. In second place, with 3 points, it's Henning Vane. And in first place, with an unassailable 6 points, it's this week's winner, Holly Walsh. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Tony Hawkes, Zoe Lyons, Holly Walsh and Henning Vane. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash, and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.
And David Mitchell and